Good evening, this is Paul Segrist for the National Park Service. Today is Friday, April 30th, 1999. I'm in Sonoma, California, at the home of Elda Willits. Elda is our interview Ellis Island series EI-8. She was one of my earliest interviews when I came to the work at Ellis Island. And I'm having the pleasure of being in town for her 90th birthday party, which is tomorrow. And I thought I would take the opportunity to re-interview Elda about some of the aspects of her life, which we did not discuss in the half an hour interview that we did 8.5 years ago. So Elda, I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you.
Can we begin by you giving me your birth date?
I was born April 29th, 1909.
Which is, of course, different than the birth date that you gave me when I interviewed you in 1990.
Exactly.
What was that birth date?
It was April the 28th, 1911.
Okay. Can you tell me why you have these two different birth dates?
Yeah. I mean, when I have the baby of 8 children. The 7th child, my sister was 7 years older than I was. When she went to work, for some reason, she wanted to be older. I don't know whether it was the job element that she had to be in or something. So she came home, and my family of 10, they didn't read or write, so my mom never kept record of anything or birthdays. And my sister said to me, you know, Elda, your birthday is really 1911 instead of 1909, so you're only, I think at the time I was only 18 and instead of 20 or something like that. And I said, oh, really? You know, how'd that happen? She says, well, you know, Mama doesn't remember anything very well, and this is it. So I said, okay. And nothing surfaced. We went through the whole time until I applied for my Social Security. And then I needed to have the birth certificate from Italy. So when it came, instead of being my birthday, I was celebrating it on April the 28th. It was the wrong date. It was April the 29th. And then instead of 11, it was 09. And I says to my husband, oh my gosh, I'm 2 years older. And he said, so what? And I figured I ought to contact Edith. You know, it all came back. So I
contacted Edith. Was your sister?
My sister. And I says, Edith, guess what? I got my birth certificate from Italy. I'm really 2 years older than I, you know. And she says, Elda, please, please, whatever you do, don't tell anybody. She would never tell her age to anyone. When she passed away, I didn't have it in the obituary, and I don't have it on her little vault or anything, because I knew it was something she couldn't face it.
Why?
I have no idea. I don't know. And so I figured, I told my husband, and he says, well, forget it then, you know, go along with it. And I was going to die with that, because I would never betray her, And then Bill went to Italy, and for some reason, my son went to Italy about, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. And I think he thought he'd get the birth certificate to complete, because I was into genealogy and everything. And he thought he'd help me. And he comes and he says, Mom, you know what? You've been telling a lie about your birthday all this time. And I said, Bill, I'll tell you the truth. And I told him. And I said, please, let's keep it in the family. And he says, I don't think that's right. I think you should just tell the truth. And so I did. And now I'm glad, because I wouldn't be celebrating my 90th birthday for 2 more years. And I don't think my body will hold up that long.
I don't know about that. How did you feel when you first discovered that you were actually 2 years older? What kind of feelings did you have about that?
Well,
it
didn't bother me at all. Uh-huh. You know, it really, because I was so intent as to how did it happen, and then I remembered Edith, and I went to her, and I figured, I don't know. I didn't feel any older. I had no feeling at all about it. I was neutral, and I figured it's a secret. Nobody's going to know, so I figured nobody will ever know, and that's it. But so you know what? Even a little white lie catches up with you, Paul.
Sooner or later.
So I have gotten caught in little white lies I've told. I got caught all of them. There isn't one thing now that I have that I can say. I might, nothing. I got caught in.
It's a great story.
I know.
Which means that you were actually 7 when you came in 1916.
Exactly.
And not 5. And there is a difference, actually.
Exactly. Yeah,
seven.
Right. I see, I left Italy when I was 6, and I got into America when I was 7 because I had a birthday during that time.
Do you have any recollection of that birthday?
No, because nobody made a fuss. Nobody, I think. Coming over, it must have been so traumatic. I was small, but the older ones, it must have been such a traumatic trip during the war being torpedoed that they didn't give me a thought, I mean, at all, nothing. I realized after, and not even in the conversation when the family talked, they would say, oh, Elder had a birthday, you know. They never said anything. I realized that after, oh my God, when I came over, I had a birthday during the time I was there, but it never came to surface with them. So I don't think it meant, my mother would cook a dinner when a birthday, but we never had candles and cake and gifts or anything like that, Paul. You know, I didn't grow up with that.
Let me ask you to sort of put you in context of your whole family, to name all your brothers and sisters from the oldest to you, because there's quite a span in age.
Oh, yeah. There isn't for the first 7, but there is after from the 7th to me.
And spell their names for me. As
all right. Beppa, and it's capital B-E-P-P-A. And then Giovanna, capital G-I-O-V-A-N-N-A. Then Algisa, capital A-L-G-I-S-A. And Paolina, capital P-A-O-L-I-N-A. And then Rico, R-I-C-O, my brother Joe, and my sister Ida, E-D-A. And then, after 7 years, I was born, and I'm Elder.
And what was your name when you were born?
Teresa Elder.
And?
Delbino. Delbino, right, yeah.
How many years between Beppa and you?
23.
23 years. How old was your mother when she had you?
My mother must have been, well, she married, see, she had my sisters in her late teens, but she must have been well over 40. Because I think, we came over, she must have been around 40 when she had me, I imagine, more or less.
Do you know anything about your birth? Did anyone ever tell you, or did your mother say, oh, you were a difficult birth or anything?
No,
like
but
that?
She did tell me that, she said, after Ida, I thought I'd never have another child because a couple of years went by and I hadn't. And she said when it got to be 4 or 5 years, I was sure I'd never have another child. And then she said, all of a sudden, I was pregnant with you. And she said, Elda, the last thing I wanted was to be pregnant, regardless of what it was. She says, when you were born and I heard you cry, I figured, God, I'd love to kill her because I can't really stand the thought of bringing up another child. And as I grew up, she said, little did I know how much I love you.
Well, I can't blame her after having all those children.
No, oh, I understood completely, Paul, what she was saying. Because imagine poverty. Nothing to eat, I mean, no help, and you have child after child. She had the wet nurse to help earnings, and it was hard. So I certainly understand, Paul, what she was saying, but there was really quite a love after. Maybe more so because of the guilt complex.
Maybe so.
She had, I don't know, you know?
What was your mother's full name?
Sabina, capital S-A-B-I-N-A, Fetty. F like in Frank, E-D-I.
Fedi.
F-E-D-I was her.
And where were you born in Italy?
In the town of Pescia. It's capital P-E-S-C-I-A, and it's all around Florence.
And is that where your mother was from?
From Pesha.
She was from Pesha.
Right.
Uh-huh. And do you know anything about your mother's childhood or her background at all?
No, I didn't until I started doing genealogy of the family. And then I was getting dates together and my sister's birth dates and when they were married, when they died. And so I have a cousin in Italy, so I phoned her and I asked Cesarina, could you please go to the church and get the year that my mother was married, because I'd like to include that. And I says, according to Beppa's age, I said, so you don't have to look through too many years. I said, she should be gotten married like the year before, you know, something like that. She called back and she said, I can't find anything. And it was the church where she got married. And so, but this cousin knew why she couldn't find it, but didn't want to tell me. She thought I'd drop it. And I said, oh, Cesarina, then get some help and just see if you can get help and really find out just exactly when she was married. Well, it turned out that she was married 3 years after we thought, which meant that two of my sisters were born out of wedlock. And I guess that's the reason why she came from a real rich family, considered really affluent in Italy. And my dad was a gardener taking care of the estate there. And they threatened, and then my cousin said, after the first child, they kept her and warned her, you're not to see him again, otherwise you'll get thrown out. Well, she had the second child. They threw her out, and she never saw her siblings or mother or father again, other than one of her brothers was a priest, and he maintained a friendship with her, and that's the only connection she had with her entire family.
Did you have any connection with her family?
Like only with the brother that's a priest.
What was your connection?
Because then, you see, my mother didn't read or write, and I was always the last one not working. All the others were working all the time, so I could read and write Italian. So I used to write letters to my uncle in Italy. I mean, and he'd answer back and forth, and I would give, and then I'd read them to my mother, and we kept the correspondence that way. My mother loved it. And at the time, I didn't know why my mother would beg me, please write Luigi. And sometimes, you know, I wouldn't feel like it, how important. Now, if she'd only told me, I would have done it so much. I mean, then I figured, oh, forget it. I mean, but now I'm really sorry I complained about writing, but I did.
Did you have any connection to Luigi when you were still in Italy?
We went to see him, but we had a picture of him with the result that I still remember him in his frock, you know, I mean, with the collar and everything, and I do because of the picture. I'm not sure I do having seen him in Italy, because then we moved to Lucca and we had to go to another town to see him. See, so we had to take the train, and we didn't go that often, I'm sure. So, but I do, she did have a picture of him, and I remember.
And spell Lucca for me.
Capital Lucca.
Thank you. How far is that from Pesha?
Oh, I think maybe it would be about like 15 or 20 miles.
And how old were you when you moved?
We moved from, my mother was born in Pesha, but my dad was born in Monsumano, and we lived in Monsumano, though.
Can you spell that, please?
Capital Monsumano.
We'll get all the spelling out at the beginning.
Yeah, so we moved from Monsumano to Lucca because my four older sisters got a job at J.P. Coates. And so because of the job, I'm sure they moved because of the employment thing. And we moved to Lucca. All the family, including Ida, were born in Monsumano. I'm the only one born in Lucca. I mean, after the move to.
In later years, did your mother ever speak of her parents in any way?
Never.
That you can remember?
No. I know she really never, as I recall now, and I wish she had said something. She never opened her heart out to any of whatever happened to her. So isn't that sad to die with something like that, that you've never really been able to express to anybody?
Do you think that your two older sisters knew?
Well, and if they did, see, they certainly didn't say anything either, because it was just, it's like 2 years of, in my, I mean, complete foreign to me. I had no idea at all. It was kind of sad.
How do you think your mother would feel knowing that you know?
Well, you know what? I don't think she'd care, because I think my mother would have been pretty broad-minded about it. I mean, because I remember here, she really made a good transition from absolutely being able to do nothing, my sisters, you know, really strict, to where when I was able to date. Oh, she still told me I had to be home at a certain time. Who is it? But I was able to date, go on dates, and she enjoyed that. So I think she would have enjoyed it.
There was a somewhat of a relaxation in her. Tell me a little bit about her personality.
Well, I think she had a great sense of humor, but she was really tough. I think she was left alone with all the children in Italy, and she must have made up her mind, I have to be the boss here, or, I mean, there'd be pandemonium. And I think she did that where she ruled with an eye. Thumb or whatever. And nobody ever disobeyed her. Nobody ever disobeyed her. All she'd have, she would say this and that was it. We all did whatever she said. I did too. I mean, even later, you know, if I couldn't, lots of times I couldn't do things. Well, I just didn't.
What were some of the rules that she liked you to live
by? Well, I think she made her own, and we went along. I mean, whatever.
Do you remember some of them specifically, some of the things that you had to adhere to?
Well, like when I was little, smaller, and going to school, and they'd have the children would have birthday parties, and I didn't even know what they were hardly, because we never had a birthday party. Maybe she didn't either, because she wouldn't let me go. I mean, I'd say, what is it? Well, who's going to be there? When are you coming home? No, she says, you better stay home. I mean, forget it. See, so, I mean, later, my sisters, I don't think they ever went out my older sisters, I think they did their courting at the house. I don't think they ever went out. I mean, and that was a rule. I mean, I did after, but she had to know they'd come at the house, and then if she didn't like them, she'd really... But usually she liked everybody, so I'd have a curfew, but I could go out. And so through it all, she maintained a sense of humor that was really kind of beautiful, you know? And that was balanced off all the other, it seemed. People loved her.
Were there certain ways that she used her sense of humor to cope with certain circumstances?
Well, I mean, that she would lose her sense of humor?
Use her
sense of humor. You know, it seemed like when things got the toughest, she'd always come up with a saying or something where, you know, and it seemed to clear the atmosphere, I mean, for all of us somehow. And
do you remember some of the sayings that she had in Italian?
In Italian, let's see. One, like, if anything ever, of course, it's in English too, like, God closes a door and opens a window, so let's not worry and let's go and, you know, things like that. She had the kind of religion I have. Her brother was a priest, but she would only go to church when she felt the need, not as a ritual on Sunday. And she really, really enjoyed that. And I guess she felt as close to God as anybody ever does.
Did she have any religious articles in the house at all? Pictures?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean,
her
favorite was the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And she had pictures and statues. And she'd have like a little altar. And she'd have votive candles. And she'd light them during the day. And I mean, and, you know, so I grew up with that. I have it too. I mean, it's something that makes me feel good. And it carried over from her, which is great, I think.
Did your mother's personality change at all from how you remember her being when you were younger to how you remember her being in later years?
Yes, it did. And I tell you why. Because it seemed like after my older sisters were married, we had kind of a house divided. There was eight of us. And the first four never really started to speak English until their children went to school and then learned words, you know. The last four, all of us, when a night school or something, we all, well, the others, I went to from first grade. And so we learned the language. And after they went away, my mother had to get to be like we were, because she had to change a little bit. She couldn't continue in as the old world as she did with my older sisters. And so she made a big change, and she changed to be more Americanized, really.
How did she go about doing that?
I mean, it was gradual. I think we bring friends in and that spoke English, you know, and she couldn't talk, but she'd give them good food, lots of hugs and lots of kisses, and they loved it. And she loved all that, and she could tell it was a different lifestyle, and she really got into it and enjoyed it. And she enjoyed after my being out and going, getting dressed and going to dances and coming home and telling her about it. So it was really, and I think we Americanized her.
And as you say, it was a gradual process.
Oh, yeah. It really, thank God I was the last one. I lucked out.
How old was your mother when she died?
93, either 92 or 93.
Talk to me a little bit about her in her late years.
Well, her late years, Paul, I mean, see, she never had a nickel to her name. I mean, from the time, way back in Italy, she always took care of the family, the chores, and everybody contributed. And it didn't change over here. So we always gave my mother money to run the house, and whatever, always extra money she could have, and she never saved anything for herself. So we always had to take care of her. Well, after everybody was married, it gets to be a problem. And so the girls are great, but the boys are their favorite, Italian, at least my Italian mother. And so she always stayed with my brother. And then, all of a sudden, my brother had twins, a boy and a girl. And first the boy was staying with a sister. But later on, he went home and they didn't have enough bedrooms. And so my mother had to go with another sister. So it seemed like she was going from pillar to post, whoever could have her. And I don't think that's as happy an existence as it might be, Paul, you know? But that's the way it was.
Did she ever express any interest in going back to Italy, even for a visit?
Never. And that's why, I mean, she never mentioned her family. Anything. Like, we went to Italy, and my sister went when she was still alive. I went after she had gone. But a couple of my sisters, and she'd always say, please go to Luigi, please go, like, you know, her brother. But she never, never, don't you want to go, Mom? No way. I mean, I came over here, this is a great land, this is where I'm going to stay. No, she hadn't, and I guess she didn't want to, really. Who would she have seen? There was nobody left over there for her, you know? Usually you go to see a relative at that age. Well, she didn't have anybody.
During your mother's life, what did she like to do for her own pleasure?
I think just her pleasure was cooking, and then the biggest pleasure was to have company over and do bigger cooking.
What were some of the things that your mother particularly enjoyed preparing?
For Sunday dinner, we always had soup. We had soup all the time. We always had pasta. We had two kinds of meat. She called it a dry one and a wet one, which meant like fried chicken, and then maybe chicken cacciatore with sauce or something. And then, of course, she wasn't great on baking. They made cookies or little things like that, biscotti, but not great in making cakes. So they would buy like panettone, it's a bread with raisins in and everything, stuff like that, and cookies. But this is what she enjoyed doing, is shopping and cooking, and some more cooking and cleaning. I mean, because, see, my dad died when she was only 50-something. So there was nobody, and she didn't have very many close friends because she was so busy taking care of the family. She never developed an outside world, Paul, like you and I have now. Isn't that kind of sad?
It's typical, though. It's not so unusual.
It isn't.
Of that generation.
Yeah, I mean, she was so busy with that. That's all she had.
Did you live, and I realize, I believe you moved a number of times, you know, as you were growing up. But wherever you moved, was it primarily, what kind of a neighborhood was it?
It was always in an Italian neighborhood for her.
Which part of San Francisco?
North Beach is where we ended up. Our first one was on North Point Street, near where the cannery is now in Ghirardelli Square. And they were all like maybe first generation, but they all spoke English and Italian. That was great. But then we went to North Beach, and there was a lot of them just like my mother. I mean, you know, where they just come over and didn't speak a word. So she felt right at home. I mean, Paul, there, the stores, like at night sometimes, coming home from work, I'd phone my mother, do you need anything before I come home? And she'd say, oh, maybe you can get some veg, some fruit or something. I'd go to the Italian stores in North Beach and speak, I'll have some of this and some of that. They would say to me, non parli italiano. Don't you know, that's how Italian it was. So, I mean, that's how she grew up and she enjoyed it there.
Did she make, you say she really didn't have many friends, but did she make, was there anyone that you remember that became a friend of the family?
Yeah, and I tell you who it was. When I started a high school, and this friend will be at my party, you'll meet her, and she sent me a card, Elder, we've been the best of friends for 76 years. And we met at high school, she's still living, and her mother, it came from Italy, but all her children were born here. So it was an English-speaking household, but her mother spoke Italian, and the children spoke Italian because they went to Italian school to learn it, you know. And so we became friends, and we'd go out, and my mother would be left alone. So she'd always go to Mrs. Segale and stay there for the evening until we'd come home for the show, and then I'd go home with her and like that. So Mrs. Segale was really her best friend because Etta and I gone together all the time.
Can you spell Segale?
Capital S-E-G-A-L-E.
And what part of Italy was Mrs. Segale
from? From Genoa.
So from the north?
From north, yeah.
Was that the makeup of the neighborhood, mostly northern Italians?
No, because there was a lot, because like Fisherman's Wharf was just about like maybe 6 or 7 blocks down the hill from there. So we had all sorts in there, really. I mean, all the fishermen, most of them were like from Naples and Sicily and all. And they all lived around. Joe DiMaggio lived there.
Really?
Yeah, he got married with Marilyn Monroe on the church where I received communion, St. Peter's and Paul's, and that's where he was buried, right in North Beach.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Do you remember, either as a child growing up or even later, do you remember there being any conflict between the people from the north of Italy and the people from
not
the south
here.
Of Italy, or the Sicilians in the south, or any kind of tension?
Not with us. There was, you could hear it, you know, it was in the paper, things would happen. But not with us, I mean, it was really no distinction there at all, Paul. It was really.
Is there anything else that you can say about your mother's relationship with Mrs. Segale, was that her name? Anything that they may have enjoyed doing together, or the kinds of things that they.
Well, you know what?
About?
They just visited because Mrs. Segale had a heart condition. And I think that's why she enjoyed my mother. Mrs. Segale never went out. And I think she enjoyed having my mother there to visit with her because it was company. And so the two of them, they had a lot to talk about because Mrs. Segale and my friend Etta, her family also consisted of 8 children, just like mine, 4 girls, 2 boys, and then two, and Etta and I are the same age. So it was really quite, they had a lot to talk about there.
That's interesting. Did the families know each other in Italy?
No. We just met in, and we only lived about a block and a half away, but we moved from, I was going to a different grammar school than Etta. See, because I was living in a different neighborhood then, so we just met when we were going to high school. And we met the first year of high school, and it's been a beautiful friendship ever since, ever since.
Did Mrs. Segale ever do anything for you?
Oh, my goodness. You know, Etta just mentioned the other day, during the Depression, we had to break up home because it was just my brother and I left. And as I say, we always supported my mother, and she had no income. And we both lost our jobs. So from a large family, those that could afford it and whose husbands were working, they took us in. And I went, my mother and I went, one sister, and my brother went with another sister whose husband was working. And we stayed there for about 2 years, I think, the Depression. Well, during that time, the Segale home was my home anytime I wanted it. And Etta just said the other day, Elda, you weren't just a friend coming in, you were another sister we had. So that's how close we really were then and how beautiful they were. See, Mrs. Segale owned the, they had the same problem with no working, but she owned property. She had 3 flats and they lived in one and she got a little income from the other. So they were far better. They were really well off compared to us. So it was really great. They took me in like I was another daughter and helping. It was great. It was great.
While we're still talking about your mother, I want to ask you, did your mother ever teach you to do something?
Housework, and I didn't like it. That's all she, because she didn't embroider, she knitted, but she didn't embroider, she didn't crochet, like no, women at that time did a lot of that. She didn't, well, I think with 8 children, you don't have time to do that, you know? And so, no, she didn't. All she could teach me was to keep the house clean, to work, to iron, and I never liked that, Paul. And she would despair. She would say, see, to her, that was everybody's life. And she'd say to me, Elda, how do you ever think you're going to get on in this world by not doing any of these chores? And I said, I don't know, but I know I don't like them.
But that certainly shows you her priorities in life.
Right, yeah, I know.
Did she ever, if she liked to knit, did she ever knit you something that you remember?
Oh, my God, yeah. We got here in April, and then in the fall, I went to school. Well, we didn't have any money. We didn't have any clothes. And I'm sure I was going to school with whatever clothes we brought from Italy. Well, it's cold in San Francisco. And so the teacher sent home a little note, and the people downstairs who spoke English translated it for my mother. And the teacher said I was getting purple in the courtyard and I should have something warm. I guess I didn't have a sweater or a coat. So, I mean, there was no money. My mother says, I'll knit her a sweater. And knitting it, oh, Paul, I mean, she figured if I'm going to go through that trouble, she's going to use it 2 or 3 years. Well, Paul, it ended up, I put the sweater on and the sleeves, I put it on and the sleeves were down to here. I mean,
past your hands.
Yeah, and then way down to here. It really was. But everybody got a big bang out of it and it was fun. But I did too, because I thought I looked funny too, but it was, you know what? I needed that sweater.
It was cold.
And you didn't realize it really. God, you know, Paul, I imagine we We had shoes with cardboard in. Oh my God, because we couldn't afford it. That's poverty.
What were the things that aggravated your mother the most? The things that she had the least amount of patience for? Certain pet peeve that she had?
I don't know. I think, she just didn't want anybody to disobey her. You know, I think if anybody said no, well, you have to take it back. And you'd have to, she'd end up by making you say yes. She was tough.
Do you remember a specific instance where you or one of your brothers and sisters did that?
Well, like with me, many times, like I wanted to go to the parties, and if she said no, she would stay with no and have no guilt complex. And lots of times I'd want to go to a show or something, it wasn't the right time. It would be no, Paul. And if she said no, forget it. I mean, you couldn't really change her mind very much. I mean, maybe though, don't you think she was in a lot of stress and, you know? Imagine saying no to 8 kids.
Just having 8 kids. Did your mother have an object, something that was hers that meant a great deal to her?
Let me see if she might have, what she might have brought. I don't think she had very much, Paul. She certainly died. None of us got anything when she died. There was nothing that she had of any value. Oh, well, I got a gold bracelet, and I don't know where she got that, Paul, but I still have it. And I have a nice gold bracelet that she had, and I don't know. And she must have treasured that from way back.
Do you remember her wearing that?
Yeah.
Growing up?
Yeah. And then I don't remember how I got it or found it, because the inside is all kind of pounded, like it's been hit against thing. And I got that. So she must have treasured that for some reason. And I can't tell you why, though. I don't know.
What aspect of your personality is like your mother? What part of you is like your mother?
I think probably the faith we have. And I think I kind of look like my mother.
Can you describe how she looked in words and how that compares to how you look in words?
We both have a long face and a long nose. And my eyes are dark, and of course her hair, I got white hair. Her hair was never white, but I think probably I have her sense of humor too. I certainly have learned because of her that I never prohibited my family for always doing whatever they thought they would enjoy. And I've always given them a freedom because of that. You learn a lot. I mean, I think things that make you unhappy, you don't want to share it with your children. And so I think probably my mother has made a better person out of me because of what she didn't allow me to do growing up.
The discipline was something good.
I think so. I think so, yeah, because, see, with the discipline, you always knew, Paul, that she loved you, regardless. You know, it wasn't a discipline where she wished you'd get out of there or anything. You could tell she loved you a lot. And, you know, it must have been miserable. As I look back, Paul, it must have been, I can't imagine living that kind of a life and how she was able to cope with all of that, with 8 children in the poverty and still maintaining a halfway sense of humor and bringing us all up. At my age now, when I was growing up, I figured I hate her for that. Now I have nothing but love and really respect for what she really was able to do for all of us. You know that? It makes, like, when I was growing up here with all, there was a lot of embarrassments, Paul, when I grew up and all that, and people would say, God, if you don't speak the Italian, if people don't speak the English language, they shouldn't be in this country, and I mean, and it hurts. Well, all of that has turned into such beauty for me now that what was painful before is joyful now. I mean, so you see, you can really change a lot over the years. I mean, in a complete transition. I don't know. My life has really gone from one extreme of pain and embarrassment to just being so happy where I am and what I am that I don't know how it happened. I mean, I let go and let God and it happened. I don't know, Paul. But.
Well, I suspect part of it too is that there's a whole different mentality about immigrants now than there was in 1925.
Well, maybe you're right, see, so, which I didn't know then.
The atmosphere, we're living in an age right now where being an immigrant is something to be proud of.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that in 1925.
Oh, it wasn't.
It was different. No. When you say embarrassment, were you embarrassed for yourself or for your mother?
I think not as much for my mother as I was for my sisters. Somehow I felt like they should have known the English language. You know, I could forgive my mother, but I couldn't. And yet they, looking back, how could they? They work 12 hours a day to make a living, to support the, they supported all of us. So how could they? They were worn out. I mean, the last thing they wanted to do is go to learn another language when they got, by the time they ate and everything. So you know what, when you're growing up, your feelings are so different than after my age when you look back and feel like what it was. Now I love them all for what they did and how they sacrificed for supporting really us, me at the time, you know? I mean, so it's a different Paul.
Let's talk about your dad.
Yeah.
What was his name?
His name was Domenico, capital D-O-M-E-N-I-C-O, Del Bino, capital D-E-L, capital B-I-N-O.
And what do you know, if anything, about his childhood and his growing up?
Well, see, all I know was he was a gardener later on. Nobody has ever told me anything about my mother or my father. My sisters didn't know. I know nothing. And then somehow I don't really think I know what it is to have a father, because he left Italy in 12. That would have made me 3 years old.
1912.
Right. See, that would have made the real age.
The real age, right?
That I would have been 3 years old. Then we didn't come over till 1916. So all that time I never even knew him. We got here to America. And we were with him a couple of days, and then he had to leave for Asti again because he had a job up there, and his money, and he'd send us food from up there. That was a necessity when we first started here in America.
Asti is a town or a
company? A town. It's 90 miles north of San Francisco.
And tell me about the work that he got in Asti. What was he doing?
Well, Asti, it was called Italian Swiss Colony. And it was a colony for Italian Swiss immigrants. And they worked the land and sold the produce, and they got board and room and a stipend. And he would send a stipend home every month. So, and then my sisters would save as much as they could every month. So it took us 4 years to save enough money for the eight of us that were left in Italy to come over here. And then, after two or three years we were there, my sisters were working, he came down, and Paul, about 3 years after that, he passed away. I mean, but the 3 years that he was here with me, we really loved each other.
Tell me a little bit about your impressions of those 3 years. What kinds of impressions do you have now about who he was, his personality, what he liked to do, what he didn't like to do?
Well, he was a self-taught man, and he could really read and write.
In what language?
Italian. He never learned English, because up in the Italian Swiss colony, they all spoke Italian. And it was, well, San Francisco, there was a lot of Italians then. So North Beach was a big place where everybody spoke Italian. But he was self-taught, so he would help me with my homework in arithmetic. I mean, I would give him, I'd tell him what the problems were, and he'd figure them all out in his head while I was figuring out. And to me, that was pretty smart at the time. Of course, it was like 22 times 12 or something, you know, I mean, yeah. But so, And then we'd make sausages together. I would even help him with crushing the grapes, and because he made his own wine and he made his own sausages and cold meats. So we were together a lot when he was here, and we really enjoyed each other. However, at the table, I mean, or anywhere, if anybody got out of hand, we never got hit, Paul, but all he had to do is look at you, and you quit. But I don't know about the other family. I didn't. I was not. I had no fear of him. It was okay for him, and I loved him, and he really loved me. It was great. He'd hug me, and if he had a little stubble of hair to rub his face against mine until I'd say, "Oh, Papa, that hurts," you know. And he loved that. That was his way of saying, "I love you."
Did you have a special name that you called him?
Babbo.
Can you spell that?
It's B-A-B-B-O.
And can you talk a little bit about his relationship? Of course, you're the youngest in the family. Can you talk a little bit about his relationship with the older brothers and sisters?
With the older, well, the sad part of it is, I think he was great other than with the one brother that he came, one, his one son he came over with. And I think that one son really felt like he was sort of left behind, you know.
Which brother was it?
Rico.
So Rico and your dad came here first in 1912.
Right, and they Rico worked in San Francisco, and my dad worked up in Asti at their town, Sioux Colony. And the two of them sort of never hit it off. I think Rico felt abandoned, and I can realize that now. I mean, I didn't know it then, but I certainly do it now. And I think he could have, should have had some kind of help, but the poor guy, he never did. So he died, I don't think, ever knowing what it was to share a little bit of happiness, Paul. But that's what happens sometimes.
What about with the other children? How did your father interact?
Yeah, as far as I know, see, and he died so young, as far as I know, he had a nice relationship. I think it's because they hadn't seen him in so long that I think, he didn't last that long, that he had a great relationship with the whole family. I think they had real respect for him.
What kinds of things did he enjoy doing for his own enjoyment?
Well, again, all I know my mother and dad did was work. Because what he'd do for enjoyment is try to provide for the house. He would make cold meats, he would make wine, he would help, you know, and that's what he did. I mean, and the two of them, like now, you know how they go out, they never went out together. I mean, they were just always at home with the family and eating and helping and doing, and where everybody just worked, Paul. Worked like you'd never believe. I mean, if you think you're working now, at that time, that's all. They didn't know that any better.
Did your father have an object that was very special to him? Something that he owned that had some kind of sentimental value or something?
See, and I don't know that either, Paul. I mean, to my knowledge, I don't think either one of them possessed anything of value because they were never able to buy anything of value. You know, I think that's the reason, because I don't remember him either having anything.
Do you remember your impressions of seeing your father for the first time when you got to the United States?
See, you know, I've been trying to really, because this woman is trying to write a book, and she asked me, and I have been trying to find, and I cannot. I don't know why, Paul, what must have happened, and whether I meant to erase it from my mind. I don't remember meeting my father for the first time, nor do I remember living in our first home where we lived for only about 2 or 3 months. That is a complete blank. As far as I'm concerned, I remember Ellis Island, I remember the train trip, then I'm absolutely blank until we moved to North Point Street. Now, why would that happen? Why would I block it out for some reason? I don't know.
Maybe it didn't make an impression on you. Maybe you're not blocking it out. You just never absorbed it in the first place.
Yeah, because I don't know. I mean, I can't, there's nothing there. So I don't know for what reason.
Can you talk a little bit about, your father lived with you for 3 years, you said.
Yeah, right? About 3 years. And then
about 3 years. He moved down from Asti,
right.
I imagine, and lived in the house.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about his illness and his death when he died, how old you were and what you remember of that whole experience?
Oh, yeah, it was,
Oh, we're just going to pause.
Well, you want to answer.
Zooming, and we were just about to talk about your father's illness.
All right. It happened during the flu epidemic. There was a flu epidemic, and he caught a cold, so everybody thought he's got part of the flu. So I guess my mother would make the regular mustard poultices and stuff to take care of it, because he got a doctor, but he never went to the hospital or anything. And after the third day, Paul, he got real bad, and they had the doctor, and it turned into pneumonia, and he had never been sick in his life, a healthy, robust man, and in 5 days, he was gone. We lost him in 5 days. That was about as sad a thing as could happen to anybody, because, like now, it's completely curable, but at that time, they had no antibiotics, and he ended up with double pneumonia, they call it. So, I mean, he just had no chance at all. And believe me, that was really shrouded our whole family in black and mourning.
What do you remember as a child about him being sick in the house?
I mean, well, I remember that nobody got any attention then, because he was getting all the attention, because he needed a lot. And I remember everybody taking turns and taking care of him, helping my mother. I mean, all my sisters really, really pitched in, did everything, everybody. They gave him a lot of care.
Do you remember seeing him in bed?
I remember seeing him in bed only when he had the flu. I think after that, my mother, and I never did go to his funeral, my mother thought I was too young for that.
How old were you at that time?
I was 12.
This is what year?
Well, I was 12, so what year?
Well, going by 1909,
around 20, around 1920.
Well, if you were born in 1909, you would have been 12 in 21.
Yeah,
turned 12. In
well,
20.
See, so because I think he died in 20. I think I should look it up, and I mean.
You actually, Elder, you might want to look it up, because it's 1922 in that
manuscript. Well, maybe then it is. Yeah, you know, then I'm 12, probably going on 13.
But 1920 makes more sense, because the influenza epidemic was well over by 1922. So
well,
in a way, 1920 makes more sense.
Yeah.
Anyway,
see, I'll look it up. Okay. And anyway, it was such a shock. But I had, even for the funeral, I had to stay with the sister. I didn't see it. And then when I got back home, there was such sadness and such mourning that I'm crying like I've never seen before, Paul. It was, to the family, that was a disaster. I mean, having my dad die, it was really a sad, sad thing.
What did you at that time understand about the circumstance?
Well, all I knew was that I enjoyed being with him a lot. And after school, he'd always be there for me. We'd have cookies together. And I really felt so different, even at school, because at school I felt different than all the other kids anyway, not learning the language, and my lunch was always different. I was different in every way. Then I kept saying, I don't even have a father, and everybody else had a father. It was a traumatic thing. I mean, it really hurt me, Paul, a lot. And it does to this day, if I think of it.
When you think of your father now,
yeah.
How, in what ways do you think about him?
I think of him and also my mother too, that they had a hard, hard life to make it a better life for all their children. That's the way I feel. They sacrificed everything, Paul, because they wanted us to have a better world.
Is there something that you do, like around the house, or something you enjoy doing that when you're doing it, you can hear your mother or your father saying something to you. Something that you do that reminds you of one of the others.
Well, you know, with my mother, it's right. Because she's got a sense of humor, sometimes when I have a cleaning lady in here and I say, oh God, Mom, wouldn't you love it to know I didn't like it, but I don't have to do it. I mean, you know, yeah. And and I think she would be real happy. She didn't know any better then, you know? And with my dad, I'm still saddened when I think how much he sacrificed, and he never got to enjoy his children or see anything good develop, and it did. So much good came out of it, and he never got a chance to see it. But to me, I feel like he does see it, so I'm happy.
Was there some sort of old world way that you expressed the grief? Like, did you have to go into a mourning period or something?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. My God. I mean, black. I think they had to wear it for 6 months or something. I mean, and I mean all black. I mean, dress, everything, even underclothes if they could, you know? And my mother had, at that time they wore a hat. She wore a hat with a veil, with a black veil. Paul, I hated it like you'd never believe. I mean, but she didn't, I was always exempt from any of that. So what she did, whatever dress I was wearing, she put a little black piping around the collar or something, and maybe a black belt or something. And I had to wear some black, because to them that was mourning.
Did you understand the significance of that at that time?
But I could not stand it, Paul. I knew she had to do it. It's something that, when I think of it now, I figure, God, how could you have happiness when all around you, all you see is everything somber and black and like a hole? I mean, it was awful, I thought. Well, that didn't last long after that. We didn't have deaths for a long time, but I know my mother even forgot all that, and there was no more black, and you could wear anything you wanted to, and I don't blame them. But they brought the old world over here.
Talk a little bit about how your mother's life changed or didn't change after your father died.
Well, see, I think my mother kind of relaxed a little bit with my father here, as far as with the children, because he felt like she had given him some of her burden. And I think then my mother took it real seriously again, that she was at the helm, that she had all those children to bring up yet, and she was going to do a job, and we weren't. And you know, Paul, I'm beginning to think now, it's because of her experience that she never could talk about that made her be so strict with us. I mean, but we never knew that. You know, and I guess she figured, I don't want them to do what I did. And so I imagine she set rules that we had to live by. Because she'd say, if anybody should spoil the honor of this family, I would kill myself. Oh, she would die. Oh my goodness, I figured, you know. And nobody ever dared, Paul.
Did your father express a similar kind of sentiment?
No.
No, that was just your mother.
Uh-huh.
Was your mother, it seems to me, listening to this, that your mother was somewhat concerned about what other people thought of the family.
She did. Oh, yeah, it was. My father never, I don't know, though. You know, he wasn't around long enough.
Your mother's personality change in any way immediately after your father died?
I think after the mourning, I think she, I really think she got real strict after that. I think she took her role real seriously, Paul, and she was determined to do her part with cooking and everything, and we had to toe the line and do everything for, you know, they expected the children to take care of the mother, you know. It isn't something that you figure, you know, she expected to be taken, that's the way they lived in Italy. I mean, that the children took care of the parents. I mean, in Italy, there's grandparents and all, they all still all live together. I mean, and that's the way she was brought up. So it didn't bother her. Like now, I can't even move up with my son. I don't want to. I want to maintain my independence. that's not the way they looked at it then. Looking at it then was you live with your children and you, and they owe you a living because you brought them into this world. Like now, it's the opposite. Over there, you owe them because they brought you into this world.
Do you think that when your father died, your mother expected then to be taken care of at that point? Because she had been sort of the head of the household for so long.
Right.
And then she wasn't. But,
right.
And now she is again.
Right.
Do you think that at that point she just didn't want to be head of the household?
I think she must have been fed up with it, Paul. You know, wouldn't you? And yet she figured like she had to. It was a job she was determined to do, however. No matter how she disliked it, as long as we were alive, she was going to see to it that we told the line and... Oh, there they are.
Okay, we're going to end tape one, and this is perfect timing.